Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, the stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Greta Anderson, and I'm here with Cynthia McClure. Good morning, Cynthia.
Hi, Greta. It looks like we have an interesting show this morning, and we'll be visited first by live musicians to play in our fabulous brand new studio here on Local Talk. Paul Doffing.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether some of our DJs have had live musicians in, but this is certainly a debut for Local Talk to have a live musician come to play in our show. So that's exciting. And Paul is not just a musician. He's a founder of ABC, Ames Bicycle Coalition. And he will be talking about Bike to Work event taking place this week. And it's actually taking place right now. and he's going to be doing a statewide musical tour this summer, Freedom from Fuel, done on his bicycle. So that's in the second half of the hour. What do you have for us, Cynthia?
Well, as many people know, the Iowa State Legislature, in the last days of its session, passed a very limited medical marijuana law with cannabis oil that would allow those who suffer from a particular type of epilepsy access to a cannabis oil that can is said to relieve symptoms. This was in response of some very vocal mothers and children with the disease. I thought it would be interesting to talk with a local neurologist here in Ames, Dr. David Moore, who treats such cases with his patients at McFarland Clinic, and to see how passages of this law will affect him as a neurologist. And assuming that Branstad signs the bill, as he is expected to do, Dr. Moore graciously agreed to come into our studio this morning and help us understand this from his perspective as a clinician in giving this substance out. So yep. Welcome, and Dr. Moore.
And
thank
he's
you.
Here with us now. great.
So thank you for coming in, Dr. Moore. This law is very specific about the kind of patients that can be treated with cannabis oil. Can you explain what disease or condition is being targeted here with the cannabis oil?
The cannabis oil bill was made so that people who have intractable epilepsy have a new form of treatment. It's for anyone who has intractable epilepsy, and there's various disorders or syndromes within the epilepsy field that this would qualify for this. One of which is Dravet syndrome. Another is Aicardi syndrome, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. So anyone who cannot be treated with the current available anticonvulsants or current standard treatments of epilepsy would qualify to be treated with cannabis oil.
And approximately how many patients do you have that would be?
I can't say exactly how many patients that I have that would qualify under this, but let's say that...
Or just give us a number.
Let's say two-thirds.
Okay.
So epilepsy is a fourth leading cause of... is a fourth major neurological disease in America, under neurological disease, if you look at all neurological diseases.
Okay, so it's common.
And it's 3% of the American population. So 3% of the Iowa population has epilepsy, if you were to look at numbers.
Okay.
Of that 3%, one-third have refractory epilepsy. Approximately. Of that one-third, probably 12% might be treated with this as a form of treatment.
Well, is this an effective treatment? I mean, we've talked off on our own about this, but I mean, would you prescribe this? Is this an effective treatment?
Is it an effective treatment? That's a very deep question, a very deep subject. If you were to look at the data, there's been over 1,700 studies done looking at marijuana and its treatment in neurological diseases. If you break that down, only approximately 34 studies really fit the criteria that we would consider to be good clinical trials or studies. Of that, three were done in epilepsy, and they did not show a big benefit in those patients. So we have anecdotal evidence that cannabinoid cannabinoids are effective at treating epilepsy.
So what are they effective at treating in those studies? Because you mentioned...
Well, actually, there's like five different disorders that were looked at over the years. One has been MS, and a treatment is spasticity and pain. Cannabis has been shown to be effective in that. It has not been shown to be effective at treating such disorders as Tourette syndrome, Huntington's disease, Parkinson's disease, and limited data in the treatment of epilepsy. The American Epilepsy Society and other neurological organizations feel that the federal government and the DEA Act should reschedule or reclassify cannabis and cannabinoids from Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 2 drug or Schedule 3 drug.
So can you you want to explain that? Because you mentioned to me in private that you are only able to prescribe level 2 drugs. And in your practice, you wouldn't be able to prescribe this because it's classified as a level 1. You'd have to get some special clearance from that.
So that's not totally clear how to do that. Okay. So I don't know how our Congress went about doing this, but the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Act, states that Scheduled 1 drugs are drugs that currently have no accepted medical use in the United States and lack any accepted safety data to say that they're effective or that they're safe to be used in humans. A Schedule 2 through Schedule 5 drugs can be used easily, but Schedule 1 drugs have to be followed by a research protocol.
And since people can't work with these, there's not a lot of research out there, so it's kind of like, you know.
It's limited research.
But if it was classified as a level 2, then there could be more research, and then these ideas could be, you know, worked
out. Right, then we can find out more information. Yes.
So it basically is the FDA has to change its mind on all this.
Well, it's the Health and Human Services has to be the person who makes the change and says that this can be changed from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. By doing that, it improves the amount of research that we can do. A recent enactment was that you can make more, grow more cannabis. So the government has made a step by saying, okay, there's a greater need for this to do scientific studies, and so we'll say that the government will allow more cannabis to be made or produced or grown in the U.S.
But legally, it's still classified as a level one. So
Scheduled one.
Scheduled one, which is right up there with heroin and some very,
that's correct,
very dangerous substances.
That's correct. Heroin, LSD, ecstasy, is all fall in the Category 1 schedules.
So it's really self-defeating to just be able to – for states to be able to do this, but then doctors can't really work with it, or there's no information out there about it that is accurate, no detailed studies that
– Well, there's anecdotal evidence that says that cannabinoid – is effective at treating epilepsy. If you look at cannabis, the plant, there's about 60 different cannabinoids that are present within the plant. Cannabidiol is one of those. THC, which is a delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinoid, is the psychoactive part. The bill that was passed says that you can have possession of cannabinoid. It can't have more than 3% of THC within it. That's what the bill passed.
People in Iowa would not be charged with a Class 1
correct
drug violation.
The dilemma you have is how do you get it from point A to point B, because there's a lot of states along the path that don't have it approved. So if you get stopped in Nebraska, can you be
liability?
Can they press charges against you?
Well, that's if you get it from Colorado and if it has 3%, you know.
Or less. So there's the bill, which is somewhat of a good bill. But if you look at the studies, at 1.9%, people had side effects. And the side effects were things consisting of cognitive slowing and delays, problems with judgment. If you look at the data, since cannabinoid has been impressed or been enacted in Colorado, the number of related auto accidents with life-threatening auto accidents has increased 10%. The number of kids having problems in school has also increased, and they all have increased amounts of cannabidiol or THC in their bodies. So it's not, when we talk about safety and not knowing how this drug acts, we don't know. If you look at drugs that have been released on the market, saying that these drugs have had thousands of people on them and the government said that they were safe. But then we later find out that they weren't safe. For example, there's medicines Vioxx, there's the FinFin diet, and other medicines that have been released on the market where we thought we had enough information to say they were safe, only to find out later that they weren't.
So what happened with those drugs?
They were removed from the market.
And what did they cause to the patients?
Cardiac abnormalities. And if we look at some recent anti-epileptic drugs that have been on the market, felbamate, which is a very good, very potent drug, treatment of epilepsy, was released in 1994. It had more than 2,000 patients in it in clinical trials that I participated in. And after it was on the market for 2 years, there was 27 to 37 deaths. And then it got this big black box warning of not being used, and now most neurologists will never use felbamate.
Because of the reactions that the people had, what were those reactions?
They had liver failure or bone marrow failure.
So these are serious conditions for these federally approved drugs.
Correct.
So
that we have a lot of data on that says they're safe.
And they're not anecdotal studies. These are, you know,
correct,
scientific, double-blind, you know.
Double-blinded, placebo-controlled studies where we look at how the drugs interact with other drugs and how they are metabolized in our body and doses. So when you do a drug study, there's typically four phases. Phase one trials are trials where a person has used medicines in healthy individuals and you say, this is a safe drug. Trials, and you use them in animals. Phase two trials are trials in which you use a larger number of patients, you try to figure out what the dosing is and what the reaction is. Phase three trials, or you use them in like, say, 1,000 to 3,000 patients, and you find out side effects, safety, drug-drug interactions, and other problems. And you determine if they're safe or not.
And none of those, in the study that you looked at, that the Neurological Society looked at, they, from 1948 to
2013.
And there were only
34 trials
that actually qualified under that.
That's correct.
That's a lot of time and very, very few real studies going on. And that's because of its class one status.
Correct.
So if they change the status to class two, more doctors could get involved with it, more research could be done, and this could be clarified in a much what actual uses cannabis
correct.
Could be used for.
That's correct.
So then that's the next phase then.
So the next phase is to have our government change its scheduling from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, which opens the door for more research.
Because you know, they want to give this to the doctors and then let them run with it, but you're not actually able to use it, you know, or prescribe it because of all these little loopholes. And
it's unclear.
It's unclear.
So the other thing that's unclear is if you watch TV, you see lawyers asking if you have man boobs, forgive the way I put that,
okay,
from taking XYZ drug as a teenager, you can now bring a lawsuit against that company sue them for giving you a medication that produces what we call gynecomastia, which is enlargement of your boobs.
So by you prescribing this, if there's ramifications down the road, they'll come back to you or one of the company made the oil or, you know, the lawyers.
Well, when something happens, a person goes out to sue everybody.
Okay.
I don't see anything in the law that says if you're a physician, you prescribe this for a catastrophic epilepsy, that you don't have to worry about being sued.
And there's not enough research on the effects of this long term.
Correct. We have none. We don't know what happens to this medication if someone takes it and they're pregnant. If you look at the anti-epileptic drugs that we know, there's Depakote, Topamax, Tegretol, that are now all scheduled D drugs, Schedule C to Schedule D drugs, and they should not be used in pregnancy. Topiramate is a Scheduled E drug or Scheduled X drug if you're taking it for headaches in pregnancy. Well, we don't know anything about what cannabidiol does for people who are pregnant.
Because of its restricted status and that you'd go to prison if you...
We don't know. I mean, right now the Obama administration has softened the punishment. I shouldn't say soften. I can't say it the way it... our Congressman Grassley made a statement that the Obama administration is not actively going out and enforcing the DEA Act of cannabis use as being a Schedule I drug.
So what do you want to see done with this? To make your because you're a neurologist, you would be prescribing this drug to your patients. What do you see that needs to be done to make it better for you to treat your patients?
Well, I ask the Iowa legislature to say, show me the data that says, number one, what's the dosing, what's the side effects, and how do you prescribe it? They're saying in the bill, it's up to your physician. Well, number one, how to evaluate the percent of cannabinol diol that's in this oil versus the amount of THC that's in the oil? I don't know that. But they say specifically in the bill, X or Y, they say that a physician from outside the state can prescribe it. Then you can go to the Department of Transportation, and the Department of Transportation will give you a ticket saying that you can carry this. Then you have to be a caregiver, because most of the people who have catastrophic epilepsy can't interact and talk the way that we interact and talk. So you have to have a caregiver who's written down that says that this caregiver can transport this stuff in Iowa. I mean, there's a lot of things within the law that I don't think is very clear on how it's to be used. If it's not clear on how it's to be used, can I as a physician prescribe it?
It sounds like it's, yeah, there's a... What do you think about this, Greta? Because you haven't said anything.
And... Well, I think there's likely to be a lot of people coming to you. I wasn't here for when you said how many patients you treat that would qualify for this drug. But those who do, it sounds like, will be coming to you and asking you, demanding to be treated in this way.
So there are patients who would never qualify, who are calling my office now asking to get cannabidiol, but they don't have refractory epilepsy as defined by the American Epilepsy Society or the International League Against Epilepsy, which is a worldwide body, to be treated with this drug.
So what happens to you if you give this to somebody without that particular – that with that epilepsy like that?
I don't know. It's not written in the law.
So you would be basically classified as somebody giving a, you know, class one drug.
Right.
And that's got prison time on it.
Potentially. Yes, ma'am.
So it's just – it's very – they just need to change this then.
Well, you know, I don't know what needs to be done other than to say that there's a lot of data and information that we don't know. And if you don't know something, you're opening up Pandora's box.
Wow.
And something won't be done until something bad happens and someone dies. And my job as a physician is to do no harm.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
You've been very helpful, and I hope this helps our listeners and the people that need to really take the next step are the people at the FDA and
the DEA.
And the DEA to change the status on this, and more research can be done, and doctors like Dr. Moore can prescribe it to patients, and people who are caregivers don't have to go through all these hoops that are imaginary so that they don't get thrown in jail.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Cynthia just spoke with Dr. David Moore of McFarland Clinic in Ames. He is a specialist in pediatric neurology, and his practice is already being affected by the Iowa legislature's new law legalizing the use of cannabis oil for certain epilepsy patients. When we come back, we'll be joined by musician Paul Doffing, also of the Ames Bicycle Coalition, who is kicking off a bike-powered tour of the Midwest this Friday at DG's Tap House.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome. Welcome back to Local Talk, and I'm your host this morning, Cynthia McClure, along with my partner, Greta Anderson. Greta misspoke a little bit earlier.
I misspoke.
Yes, it was
Shame on me.
it was an easy mistake. You want to...
I referred to Dr. Moore as a pediatric neurologist, and the fact is that he treats pediatric patients, but he does not see himself as a specialist in that field. He's a specialist in epilepsy, and he treats adults and children in that area.
So. Yeah, he corrected us once we got off the air, and bless his heart. Thank you, Dr. Moore, for coming in. He had some really interesting concerns, but, you know, let's move on to a lighter side. Greta, who do we
What's lighter than... Oh, no. okay. We have in our studio local Ames musician Paul Doffing, and we just heard a song from his new album. The song is called Awake in a Dream. It was a lovely sort of meditative way to start your morning, and then his album that it's on is Paul Doffing, self-titled. Anyway, welcome, Paul, to the show.
Thank you. I think, is this my mic? This
That's
is my
you.
Mic? All right, cool.
He's got the fancy mic. It almost looks like a stage prop.
It does kind of look like a stage prop.
And Paul Doffing has quite a bit in the offing, shall we say, this week. I should have known he would giggle. He giggled on the phone when I talked to him earlier. He is a prime mover of the Ames Bicycle Coalition, and that's easily called ABC, and an organizer of Bicycle to Work Week, which is happening right now. We're right in the middle of Bicycle to Work Week. How do you feel about that, Paul?
That's really cool. I think that's really cool. I'm very excited that everyone in the coalition did a bunch of effort to organize everything and get it all together. We have events almost every day, every day this week. And last year we weren't even a thing when this week happened. So I think that's really cool.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Let's talk a little more about that. Bicycle to Work Week is a national event that you kind of plug into?
Yeah. I think it's kind of an event that anyone can do, and there's no real official rules as far as how you are involved with it. I think the theme is just, you know, ride your bike to work, and that's kind of all there is to it. But they, I guess one of the ways that you can invigorate your community in Bike to Work Week is to have events. So we reached out to the co-op and a bunch of the bike shops and some of the bars and organized events that will kind of activate the cycling community and bring everyone together to kind of hang out and eat or drink and just generally share their love of cycling or whatever else is on their mind, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, the purpose of Bike to Work Week is to get people unhooked from the fuel, the carbon-based fuels, and moving toward a more sustainable alternative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's just for a lot of us who already bike all the time, we've actually been joking a little bit at a lot of the events, like, oh, it's Bike to Work Week. I guess I'll bike to work now. But we always bike to work, even in the winter, so it doesn't really... You're not really saying much to have the Bike to Work Week, except that we all get to get together and have muffins or whatever. So I biked every day of this year, except maybe two or three.
When it was like 30 below?
Yeah, and I don't know that it actually had to do with when it was the coldest. It was just the days that I didn't have to do anything. That was, you know,
just stay home?
House. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so tell us a few details about what's going on today and tomorrow.
Okay, so today, the Teal Bicycle Breakfast is happening from 7 to 9 a.m., and that's right down on Main Street. It's 526 Main Street, and if you're on your bike right now listening to this, head over there.
How many bikes are equipped with radios?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not all of them. Not all of them, but some are. There's all kinds of different cyclists. I mean, that's definitely one of the things that I've noticed just starting the coalition and kind of getting to know more of the people around here who bike. There really are as many different kinds of cyclists as you would imagine. They're just everyone bikes.
So is it like a mini rag bike kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that in a way it would be kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah, people get together and they just have a good time, but in a much smaller, more intimate setting and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I think at this point, what else we talk about, I guess, is a lot of the efforts that we've been making are starting to have some fruition in an actual political way, you know, on-street infrastructure actually getting changed or planned. And so I think that's, you know, on our collective mind.
Well, actually, I was going to ask about the political the political end of the Ames Bicycle Coalition, because, you know, the word coalition brings up kind of that idea of working together toward a common, you know, political goal.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly are you shooting for here in Ames?
I think it's actually really simple. Basically, we just want to make sure that people who ride bikes are safe on the road. And in a sort of quantifiable way would be preferred, I would say. Just the idea of safety in general, in terms of using a certain method of transportation, I think is probably the most important thing. Obviously, if you didn't feel safe getting in your car, you'd probably do it less. But on your bike, it's kind of all the more so. If you don't feel safe riding your bike around town, you're probably not going to ride your bike around town. And I think that in a town like Ames, it's so small and really is such a perfect place for cyclists to exist because everything's really close by. Literally, you could bike all the way across the town in, you know, half an hour. It's definitely a priority that we need to have to make it a safe place for cyclists. And we really, that it would feel safe when you're actually on your bike would probably be the best goal, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about Ames, and it is a small town, but there's also some space and some green spaces. So there's nice passages through parks that you can make if you're going from downtown to campus town. And the distance between downtown and campus town also sort of makes Ames not entirely walkable.
Yeah.
So the bike is like a, it seems like it would be, it's a perfect vehicle for Ames.
Yeah, and there's definitely more momentum towards people using bikes, I think, or alternative transportation in general. There's been some measurable realities that have pointed that way, and one of them was that the enrollment of ISU overall increased this year, but the number of cars that were registered actually decreased. So it definitely people are turning more away from having a car at college, which, you know, that accounts for a big part of the population in Ames, I think. But also, you know, gas prices are going up, and the national trend is definitely more people are biking. And in Ames, we already have an above-average number of cyclists in terms of a city in the United States. An average city in the United States has about 0.5% of people commute by bike, and here over 3% of people by bike. So we already have a lot of people who do bike. And so it's really the work we're doing, and this is the way I really do see it, is that the people are already on the road. They're not asking to be protected in order to bike. They're biking even though they aren't protected in many cases. So I think that that should be a top priority, you know, realizing, hey, these people, we actually are putting them in unsafe situations in a number of places, and we could do better, so let's.
Well, when you say that unsafe, that that's a red flag.
Yeah.
So what particular areas of Ames are unsafe that you, because you bike every day, you're in this.
Yeah.
You know, not just for a week.
There are a lot. Yeah, yeah, there's more than, that's actually one of the, so we've been trying to take on this question in an authentic way, and I could sort of spew off a bunch of, you know, specific spots that come to my mind, but I don't bike throughout the whole town. So actually one of the things we're doing during Bike to Work Week is taking a survey. So we have sort of made this small survey, it's a 5-question survey, and you can take it at any of the places we have them everywhere that we're having Bike to Work Week events. And you fill it out, and it's directed to kind of survey the cycling populace and see what they think about biking in Ames and get some more details, and also to get them signed up so that when we do a bigger survey that's more in-depth about specific intersections, specific crossings, where they might have had an accident, you know, all these kinds of more detailed information that we can't necessarily, I mean, if I have a conversation with one person, I might remember everything they said, but in order to like quantify that into some kind of a plan or a comprehensive thing to say, look, City of Ames, this is what the cycling populace has to say to you, we feel like that'd probably be the most powerful way that we could say it. So that's
what we're trying to do. Making it more bike-friendly and letting the drivers know to be careful, you know, kind of putting the...
Yeah, I think that a lot of it is actually about understanding the infrastructure and making it work in a effective way. The part of what goes on in Ames, and I think a lot of cities that are kind of developing cycling infrastructure, is that bikes are moving between cycle-specific infrastructure and then shared infrastructure, which a lot of times is So in Ames, there's a shared use path. There's many shared use paths, and most of them you probably wouldn't call a shared use path ever unless I told you it was called a shared use path. You'd call it a sidewalk. And the sidewalks are often not very wide. You couldn't really bike down the sidewalk with two cyclists very easily, and definitely not if there's anyone else around. So a lot of places, for instance, like the length of Lincoln Way from downtown all the way to Campustown is a shared use path where there's a lot of pedestrians, plus the actual surface that you bike on is not continuous. So the sidewalk, even being a sidewalk, which is already, I would say, commonly understood in the cycling community as not the place to bike, is the place where most people are biking. And that surface is not continuous, and the width varies. So it's just...
So it's uneven. Yeah. It's unsafe because pedestrians are walking on it with their kids or their pets.
And it's actually mostly unsafe because it's not in traffic. The reality is that sidewalks are the place where cyclists generally get hit.
When people are moving in their driveway or crosswalks or...
And in turning. So people, if someone's coming to a stop and they want to go right, and, or actually let's say they want to go left. They approach the intersection, you're coming from the right, they look left, they don't see you, you pull out, they pull into you, because they're not looking the direction you're coming, as opposed to being on the actual road surface where you'd be in the lane of traffic that they're entering. So, anyway, it's a complicated question. It's definitely something that we've been spending a lot of time working on. We meet twice a month at City Hall for probably 2 hours every time, and we've been doing that for months now. So, and I think we plan and hope to continue doing that. I think we view it as a long term effort and something that if it's going to change, it's going to need to take a solid effort. So.
And is there similar efforts in Story County? Do you extend your interest to that region, or are you just kind of focusing on Ames at this point?
There, I would say yes, in terms of I hope that we can help, and I think that we do have representation from further out in Story County. Some of our members are part of planning countywide, so that kind of helps to have a perspective of Story County, but I don't think that any of our specific efforts so far have been directed at the county as a whole, just because I think that right now we are trying to focus on, I guess you'd call it low-hanging fruit, like we're just trying to get what we can get done that really is the obvious stuff that really needs to be done, and then move on to the sort of bigger picture, like what's more difficult, what's more beneficial in the long term, that kind of stuff. Yeah, the county roads and cycling advocacy in counties and greater Iowa, I would say, is a whole different beast, and I think that also feeling safe on those kind of roads is a different question entirely than feeling safe in town.
So. Makes sense. Okay, well, I think we've put you through your paces.
That's fine.
And we are excited to hear the music that you have in that guitar right there. Let's see. Do we have a drum roll, James?
Am I starting after this?
How was that?
That was awesome.
It's the Freedom From Fuel Tour, folks. That's right. Ames native son, Paul Doffing, is about to do the unthinkable. Ride across Iowa with a guitar strapped to his back and a song in his heart, playing musical venues all along the way.
Is that true, Paul? How are you going to travel across the state of Iowa?
It's mostly true. I'm actually not a native of Ames. I've only lived here since last May.
Oh, my bad.
It's close. It's very close. It sounded really nice, actually. I almost wanted to be a native of Ames after hearing that. It sounded like such a good... thing, like hometown hero. Okay.
Right on.
That is true. I don't know how many miles you said. This tour of the summer should be about 2,300 or so miles, which is, to give you an idea of how much that is, that's about five times the full length of an average rag bri. So.
Wow.
Right on.
But it's not the longest one I've done. So.
Oh, okay. And you're gonna you actually have your guitar on a wagon behind you, or?
Yeah, a trailer. It's a touring trailer. It's kind of a convenient way to carry a guitar.
Okay. And then when you're at the venues, is that like solar powered or what?
I wish. That'd be great.
Okay. Well, enough chit-chat. What are you going to play for us today?
I guess I'm just going to play a favorite. This is the first song off of the new album. It's called Rolling in My Bones. And there's a cool video of me playing this guitar, or this while riding my bike and playing the guitar.
online. I saw that. Yeah. You're like riding your bike without any hands and playing your guitar.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. You can check it out on YouTube. I just look for Rolling in My Bones. I've been looking back and forth. I've been confused for oh so long. But I'm settling on a way to go. I've got rolling in my bones. Now you've been so pretty and oh so warm, the sunshine in this springtime of mine. But you know some things, they're just too good to be true, and I've got rolling in my bones. I've got rolling in my bones, and good God knows it's time to go. I woke up this morning, I knew I had to let her go. 'Cause it's time to bet it all, it's time to fight or else to fall. And there ain't no time to wonder, and there's a roll in my bones. It's time to take control. It's time to see and so to know. It's time to brave the bending slopes and slumber in the folds of this land I've never known. And oh, to feel the cold wind blow. I welcome it with open arms and a blowing in my soul. I've got rolling in my bones, and good God knows it's time to go. I woke up this morning, I knew I had to let her go. 'Cause it's time to bet it all, it's time to fight or else to fall. And there ain't no time to wonder, no, there's a rolling in my bones. I've got rolling in my bones, and I don't know which way to go. Chicago towards the windy east, or Rocky Colorado. And there's no time to wonder why, no warm tears well up to cry. 'Cause I've been here far too long, you know, I've got rolling in my bones. There you go.
All right.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
I am so sincere about that. It was beautiful. And, I'm, you know, so appropriate also for your tour coming up.
This is
KHOI. We're live here, KHOI Local Talk, and we have Paul Doffing in the studio. He's he founded the Ames Bicycle Coalition. He's gotten Bike to Work Week going, which is happening right now. And at the end of the week, he will be performing at DG's Tap House as a start to his Freedom from Fuel tour. That's hard to say.
Freedom from Fuel tour. Yeah, it is kind of hard to say. And it's also a free show on Friday. Music starts at 9 p.m. And there's two other bands from Ames that are playing, Blue Jack. A guy named Jordan Voigt. He's awesome. And
so this is open to the public, and all people are welcome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's free. And you actually get...
We have a little joke about not saying free on. It's just one of those DEA things.
Wait a minute. It's one of those letter people. One of those letter clubs, the guys at the letter
club. At no cost to yourself, you can come and see the show.
It's open to the public. And everyone is welcome.
If you bring your bike helmet or ride your bike, riding your bike would definitely be better, and wearing your helmet is cool. You get a funny tap here. And Dr. Murdoch's a good local rock band who agreed to play the show. So
it'll be a fun environment especially for adults seeking a frothy 21 and older beverage.
Ooh.
Yes. I think they have a lot of beer there. I'm not sure too much about beer because I don't drink very much, but...
You're just a paragon of health and good vibes.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess. Thank you. I'm glad.
And we want to actually hear another song.
Oh, really? All right.
Cool. Yeah. I want more of that good vibes right now.
All right. Sounds good. I got to think of what else I want to play.
That was good. Looking at Don't stop now.
Yeah, there's no noodling on the air. Now, come on. No, it's good. Or tuning. Yeah, there's no tuning on the air either.
I'm going to play a song called Rabid Wolf.
Awesome.
Thank you.
That was Paul Doffing.
Oh, my God.
Excellent work.
Paul Doffing from an Ames musician who's starting kicking off his Freedom from Fuel tour that's going all around the state of Iowa and actually into Wisconsin, Minnesota, other places.
Yeah.
Thanks for so much for coming in. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
And will you come back and share some stories from the road?
Oh, man, I would love to. That'd be great.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have to sign off now. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been talking to Paul Doffing, Ames musician and founder of Ames Bicycle Coalition. He's putting together his Two Loves and a statewide musical tour, powered by his own metabolism. Do you have a website there to go to?
It's just my name, Paul Doffing.
Okay.
.com.
All right.
Doffing.
Yeah, and you can actually download the album there if you liked what you heard. He's also helped organize Ames Bike to Work Week, which is happening this week and is happening right now over at Teal Cycles.
We also spoke with Ames neurologist David Moore from McFarland Clinic about the new cannabis oil law, which will impact his practice in treating epilepsy at the clinic. Many thanks to Dr. Moore for taking the time out from his schedule to visit with us.
We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Cynthia McClure. James Winters engineered the show. Our theme music is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
This show will be available online at the end of today, along with a list of the Visha forums posts.
Whoops. That's from last week's show.
Somebody didn't update it. Anyway, we'll have this show for your availability and more information on khoyfm.org.
And you can also use that address to send us feedback on our shows or donate money to support our operating budget. Your participation as listener and your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
we'll see you again
on the radio.